This podcast is made possible in part by ProHealth Physicians, along with the members of WSHU Public Radio. If you want to support what you hear, you can donate at WSHU.org.
When people call 911, it most often is their worst moment of their life. And we, interestingly, are key pieces of that. And so we come and we maintain safety. We come and we restore order. I think foundationally, that is what we do. My name is Mike Fumiati. I work as a captain in the New Haven Police Department. Currently, I'm assigned to professional standards, training, and administration within the New Haven Police Department. I also am one of the co-directors for the Connecticut Alliance of Benefit Law Enforcement, which conducts all of our crisis intervention team training throughout the state of Connecticut.
And I'm Randy Kay, host of the podcast Good at Heart, where we speak with people who make the world better. When we think about police work, we often picture crime scenes and handcuffs and sirens, but there's another side to the badge, one that's built on compassion and patience and the ability to help people through some of the hardest moments of their lives. Today, I'll be talking with a police captain, specially trained in crisis intervention, and this conversation will offer a glimpse into the good work that often happens far from the headlines. So my first question is, if you were to describe your job in this way, who do you help and how?
That's a great question. I think that it's a very broad question, obviously, but I think we help the people who need it the most. We help them in a number of different ways. And so I think when people think of the police department or a police department, they think of justice. Hopefully, we help in people's worst day. But during those times, there's a whole lot that's done, like you talked about before, compassionately, away from the headlines. I've watched officers do absolutely incredible things and care for people. We can go to someone who, you know, is frustrated because their neighbor's car is blocking their driveway and they can't get to work. And for them, that is the most frustrating thing at the moment. We also can go to somebody who's just lost a loved one to gun violence. We show up to those scenes where violence is occurring. We restore order so that that violence doesn't occur, at least for the short time that we're there. Then the goal is to try to address any of the implications after that. I think police have gotten much better at that over the years. We are much more in tune with trauma-informed policing, interacting with people, providing them resources afterwards, recognizing that all of these compounding of traumas, especially in an urban environment, are creating additional problems for us. And so in a roundabout way, that's also like a crime prevention, public safety. Yeah, so I'd say a simple answer to your question is we help the people who need it the most. And I'd say at minimum, hopefully we provide them some safety in that time period. Okay. And then after that, there's a whole host of things that we can provide.
As you know, I have had to call the police on some of the worst days of my life because I have a family member with a severe mental illness. And so, full disclosure, I've had the privilege of speaking at a conference for crisis intervention trained officers. That's how we met. But I want to ask you about you. Why did you get into this work? Why does this matter to you?
For me, it's an easy one. My family was all police officers. My grandfather was a police officer in New Haven from 1959 to 1989. And so a lot of his stories, when he first started as a police officer, they didn't have radios. My grandfather's now deceased. But it's fascinating to think about, like, police work back then, the social problems are the same. Mm-hmm. They change over time and we get more technology. But human beings interacting with one another and doing terrible things to each other, but also doing incredible feats of heroism. I always say in policing, we see the worst of the worst, but we also see the best of the best. Mm-hmm. Because in those moments, there's a lot of humanity that happens. So my grandfather was a police officer. My uncle was a police officer who was shot and killed by a career criminal in the city of New Haven. And so he was shot on June 13th, 2002. And then he passed away on January 10th, 2007. And so both of those incidents happened in like my formative years. I remember in my uncle's funeral, there's a portion of the funeral, there's a couple of gut-wrenching things that happen. There's a portion of it where the entire department lines up at one point individually and in groups, and they come and salute the casket, and then they take their right glove off and put it on the casket, symbolizing that they would give their right hand for that person.
Does that happen at every police funeral?
There's some traditions. There are certain things that happen as formality. I can't say it happens at everyone, but it is a classic tradition that does happen at a lot of them. And so to me, like, how could you not want to be a part of that? I've always kind of gravitated towards helping people and trying to make a difference, trying to solve problems, trying to help people work through challenging things. And so I love the job. I think it's the best job in the world by far.
Let's veer off for a second and talk to me about crisis intervention training and who takes it? Why do they take it? Does it make a difference in the way you operate in the community?
Yeah, great question. That comes up a lot. I've been involved in CIT for about a decade now, crisis intervention team training. It looks different in different departments, but generally the training is standardized across the state of Connecticut. So it is a 40-hour model. It's based on the Memphis model from Memphis, Tennessee. I think it's around 1987 when there's an incident where police there are, interact with an individual in a mental health crisis. And unfortunately, because of the circumstances, shoot him and unfortunately he dies as a result of that. But so a number of professionals at that time got together and said, hey, how do we help police understand people better? How do we help police interact with individuals in crisis and especially those with mental illness? How do we help them understand and interact better? And so that has morphed over the years. That's about, you know, 40 years now. In Connecticut, it's recommended that while we don't say all officers should take it, it is recommended that officers take it if they're interested in it. In Connecticut specifically, having like a mental health training for officers, hey, this is what mental illness looks like, just for general. That's what they do in the academy. This 40-hour model digs a lot deeper. How do you interact with somebody who is suffering from suicidal ideations? How do you communicate with them? How do you build rapport with them? I've watched officers do it on the sides of bridges. We just had officers pull an individual who jumped off a garage and tried to hang himself. Two of our officers reached over the edge and pulled him back up and saved his life. And so while there was not a lot of communication in that circumstance, we train officers to give them the tools that they need when they're in these situations. Because if we don't give them the tools, they just figure it out on their own the best way that humans know how. And so police officers specifically have been doing this for a long time. A lot of police officers who are in this world interacting with people day in and day out get pretty good at communicating, trying to avoid conflict, addressing conflict. This is just a broader set of skills and tools. Someone who's having hallucinations and delusions, especially, you know, whether it's a result of drugs or a mental health crisis, the way they present can induce fear. And yes. So if more officers understand, the less likely their first reaction is fear, and they can then change the game a little bit, use different strategies, use different tactics that are time tested and proven to have a better result. And I think where the rubber meets the road for me is you can see the change happen in officers. And so I've been on scenes where officers have not been CIT trained and they're newer officers and they just don't have that skill set yet. They're still trying to figure themselves out as police officers. Then they see somebody who does have CIT training or they go to CIT training and they say, hey, how does that stuff work? You know, like you were able to talk to this person who was so angry at us and get them to go in the ambulance on their own or get them to turn around and put their hands behind their back. Like those communication strategies are phenomenal tools for officers to have. And so addressing those topics and giving officers the information that they need to relate to people, communicate with people, and then provide resources afterwards so that we don't have the same call happening over and over again.
Yeah. And, you know, as the mother of someone with a serious mental illness, I could not agree more. And you know, what saddens me is that this is not the kind of police work that makes the headlines. And that's why we have this podcast, obviously. But, you know, I wrote a blog post once on Substack, you know, asking if someone is in politics or business or police, you know, in the service of power or for the power of service. And clearly, you know, you are a police officer who is in love with serving other people. And that's what I want to shine a light on. So what inspires you? I know obviously your grandfather, your family being police officers, but is there a piece of advice you ever got or a quote that inspires you that you would like to pass on?
The first one that comes to mind is the harder I work, the luckier I get. That one just always is, for me, that comes out quite a bit. I value hard work. I value people who do the work just to do the work, not to talk about it. And so I think that that phrase, I think, is probably is pretty high up there. I think the challenge in law enforcement is that we don't necessarily talk about our work very well. And so it's hard for us to boast about the good things that we do because, one, most of the officers that I see aren't doing it for the accolades. They aren't doing it for the social media post. They're just doing it because it's the right thing to do. By saying that, then that leads me to my next piece of what motivates me is the young cops who have been told for years, and it's the pendulum swings back and forth and society moves this way. The 70s, 60s, 70s, every decade has the challenges with law enforcement and their interaction with the communities that they police. And so as the things swing one way or the other, there are still human beings who will say, you know what, even though people say bad things about that group of people and say that they're out there doing terrible things, I want to go and see. I want to go do it for myself. Yeah, sure, I'll put a gun and a badge on and a vest, and I'll go out there and try to make a difference. And to me, like, I mean, what's better than that? You get to be out in the world helping people in their worst moments. I think that that honestly really motivates me. I think that's what the job's all about. Sure, there's a lot of other stuff, but as public servants, like, we're all just people trying to figure it out. I also, if I could, I honestly encourage everybody to take a ride along. If you think you know what policing is like, I encourage you to take a ride along. I love having people in my cruiser, showing them the city, showing them the area, showing them what's really going on. The media tells you one thing, people will say another, but you can come and sit right in our seat. A shameless plug for our department. We're always hiring. We're short about 60 cops-ish, maybe a little bit more. Our website's beacopnewhaven.com. We do about 2 tests a year. And so if anybody's interested in being a police officer, we'll gladly try to get you in and so you can join us and see what it's all about.
How does one do a ride along? Do you have to want to be a cop to do it, or do you just what do you do?
I think we did over 250 last year in New Haven. People did 250 ride alongs. As long as you can pass a background check, you fill out some paperwork. You can actually do it on that website, beacopnewhaven.com. So if you go to that website, it'll say, fill out a ride-along form and you can come and you can ask for whatever district you want to work in. New Haven has 10 districts, so you could do downtown if you wanted to on a bar night. Yeah, we're happy to open our doors for people to see what it's really like.
I love that. I did that once. I did a ride-along once in Fairfield, Connecticut, and we got to visit a family. Their child had just been in crisis the day before. I felt like, well, I'm an actor, so I was, you know, jump into the shoes of people, but I'm like there with my little clipboard and I was just feeling like, oh, I'm the detective on the scene. But it is so eye-opening to ride in that car and look how people look at you, and then get out and visit a family. And that officer, I think it was a lieutenant, was giving resources to the family. And for severe mental illness, for somebody to visit the family the day after the crisis and say, how are you doing? Here are some resources.
Incredible.
Priceless.
There was another quote that always comes to mind that when I think about policing, police officers go places that nobody else wants to go and talk to people that nobody else want to talk to. And so if you think about it, we get a lot of calls for, hey, that person's talking to themselves over there. I'm worried about them. They're in a tent, X, Y, and Z. And people don't go and talk to them as humans, but the police go. Yeah. And so that's always an interesting thing. Like, we can't just say, hey, we're not going to go talk to that person. We can say it's not a crime. What are we investigating? I ran one of the districts in New Haven for 5 years, and I'd get a call about people who are unhoused quite a bit. Hey, there's a guy with a tent that just popped up. And I'd say to those people calling, well, did you talk to them? What's their name? Oh, I'm not going to talk to them. They could be dangerous. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to go and ask the person what their name is and how they ended up in that circumstance. And like, sure, I guess if push comes to shove, they could get arrested. But the goal is to figure out how this person got to the point they're at, and how do we avoid them getting there again? And how do we avoid someone else getting to that same spot?
So 2 more questions, Mike. How can others help you now? I think you've already mentioned being aware what the police are there for and doing a ride along. Is there anything else that comes to mind as I ask that question? How can others support their local police departments?
So if you think about it, policing is a challenging job. People are not always going to agree with the way the police do things. Before you snap to judgment, see what it's like first. And so people will say like, oh, I don't like the cops. Okay, right. Well, why? Did you have a personal interaction with a police officer who was you perceived as being rude or whatever the circumstances are? We can't say police are bad in one sentence and then say, well, we need to hire good police officers. I'm in charge of recruiting, and right now I oversee recruiting and backgrounds in our department. Our teams can turn a good person who cares into a good cop. It's very challenging to make somebody who's a good cop who doesn't have that quality of caring care. I think the way people help is honestly just being a little bit kinder. Trying to understand. And I get it. There's plenty of videos out there where cops are yelling at people and doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And they should be held accountable for that. You can't act this way in society. And so police officers are held to a higher standard. But I'd say just be kinder. I always get a little awkward when people thank me for my service. But it is a nice thing to be appreciated. And, you know, on social media, you see, oh, cops are bad. They're doing X, Y, and Z. Most cops are just out here trying to make a difference. They're going from call to call. They're trying to do the right thing in the best way they know how. I'd say just being kinder, being more supportive of the police. Hey, we appreciate that you're here. I think those things in society, you can disagree, but like, I think appreciating the fact that someone is willing to put a gun, a badge on, and risk their life for a random citizen, I think that's still worth doing. I still think it's an honorable profession. I still think it's a great profession. I think that's worth lifting up in our society.
Thank you so much for that, because I think it also begins, I'm a grandmother of three, and I would say, don't say to your kids, don't do that or the police will come get you. Like, it begins there. And look, I grew up in a generation where there was part of the country calling police officers pigs. I don't know if you remember that in your ancient history, but
we still get that quite a bit. There's somebody who spray painted right down the street, kill cops. Right on our police department. And so like, that's, at this point in my career, it doesn't really bother me. It's challenging to not be supported or feel supported.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm not a perfect person, but I'm aware that it starts young, and I'm always telling my kids, look at that police officer, how he's helping us. You know, even, and I try, this is hard, but if a police officer, it has been a long time since I've been pulled over for speeding, but you know, yay, but, I have been in the past, and if this were to happen, I would want to be in the state of mind to say, this person is trying to keep the roads safe. This person might be a little bit afraid, so I'm going to put my hands up so he or she feels safe and knows that I'm cooperating, because it takes a little bit of empathy to see something from another person's point of view. And the final question is, this is philosophical, but why do you think we're here on Earth?
Why do I think we're here on Earth? Well, I think that there is something interesting that human beings have that no other animals have. And it's obviously our ability to know that we exist and think about ourselves in that way. I don't really know. Honestly, I'm not literally left speechless very often, but I don't know.
Okay, that's a fair answer. We can leave it at that, but I'm just going to give you a different prompt. If you were to say, I feel like my purpose in this lifetime is to blank. Is there anything, you know, to love your family, to help mankind, to help other people stay safe? Is there anything that comes to mind? But if not, we can just leave it at, it's a hard question to answer, which is a perfectly valid answer.
Yeah. So my understanding of your first question is like, why are humans here? Not like meaning like you and me, why are we here?
Why are you and I here on Earth?
So I think that, I have been, blessed with a line of work that suits me personally very well. And I've had the opportunity to be in a lot of really incredible circumstances where I like to think I can make a difference in people's worst moments, like we talked about earlier, for myself and for other police officers. That is incredibly rewarding as a human being, to be able to be in someone's worst moment and maybe make it a little bit better. And I think that if you think about that, like, I just try to make a difference in people's lives every time anywhere I am, I just try to make someone's day better because I was there. And so I think that if everybody lived like that, I think we'd have a better existence as human beings. Police might be out of a job then, But I think,
wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, I think that like people don't talk to people. People aren't kind to people. Like, it's to me, it's just why wouldn't you just be like that? It doesn't make any sense to me to be angry and mean and upset about things when sure people could be going through different things. But I just think about the fact that I woke up today, got to do a job that I love, and anywhere I go, I just try to make a difference. And so I think if more people did that, I think maybe we'd be all be better off.
Yeah. And there's your answer. And you know, it's what comes to mind every time I get on stage to do a role, to tell a story to a group of people. Every time I crack open a mic and narrate an audiobook or host a news show on WSHU, I heard a speaker once that Bernie Siegel was his name. He was a happiness expert, Dr. Bernie Siegel from New Haven, or worked in Yale for a while. And he, at the end of his speech, which is, you know, being happier can help make you healthier, was basically his overall message. But he said, what if all of us thought of our jobs as a way to bring more love into the world? And I always think of that every time I just open the mic to say, you know, you're listening to WSHU. How you doing this afternoon? I just imagine one person in their car going, oh, a friendly voice, like just make their day better. You know, whether we're putting out fires, collecting garbage, fixing the road, you know, whatever we're doing, if we can phrase it in the way you just did, we're making other people's lives a little bit better by what we're able to do. I think that's a great way to live. So, Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
If you know someone who you think would be a good guest for the podcast, there's a form you can fill out on our website. You'll find it at wshu.org.